Unions will take them. All right. The stakes today, of course, the quick rundown, and actually what a perfect time to bring Joe Longo in. Let's do that. We got about 5-6 minutes to spend with Joe ahead of Nick Luck joining us. And Joe, good morning.
Steve, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, and I wanted to get you in, and this is as good as having you yesterday. I want everybody to get a handle on later this afternoon, and particularly the two-day wagers, because this is a very heavy two-day wager, you know, menu, essentially. So let's give everybody the rundown.
Sure. So we have, in terms of the two-day doubles, there's four. So we have our New York Met Mile double, and all these are at a dollar base. So that would combine the New York today, which is race 10, and the Met Mile tomorrow, which is race 9. The Belmont Gold Cup, Belmont Stakes double. So the Gold Cup today is race 8, Belmont Stakes is race 11 tomorrow. And those are two we've done a lot over the years. Last year is when we started with the Philly and Mare double as well as the Sprint double. So the Philly and Mare double would combine race 11, the Intercontinental, with race 7, the Phipps tomorrow. And the Sprint double is going to be the True North, which is race 9, and the Jiper tomorrow, which is race 8. So those are the four two-day doubles. Moving into the additional two-day wagers, the two-day pick four, which is at a $2 base, so higher than normal, that'd be races 10 and 11, the New York and Intercontinental today, as well as races 10 and 11 tomorrow, the Manhattan and Belmont. And then the two-day pick six, which is at a 20-cent base. So, you know, again, same thing as last year, different from our standard dollar base. And that is races 9 and 10, so the True North in New York today. And then races 6, 8, 10, and 11 tomorrow, which is the Woody Stevens, Jiper, Manhattan, and Belmont. And then tomorrow, new this year, we are doing a Met Mile Belmont Stakes double. So the Met Mile is race 9. The Belmont Stakes is race 11. And then the turf triple, well, the triple play, but it's going to be all turf races. That's at a $3 base, and that is going to be races 4, 8, and 10, the Just the Game, Jiper, and Manhattan. So that would be, you know, in addition to everything we're doing tomorrow with the wagering menu, which is also going to include three pick fives, four pick fours, pick six, and, you know, the supporting wagers we normally do on a regular basis.
A couple of notes, Joe, on the those extra pick fives that have been layered in on Saturdays, and those are mandatory force outs, right? The one today races 4 through 8, and then the one tomorrow races 7 through the Belmont. So the Phipps, the Jiper, the Met, the Manhattan, and the Belmont, that's a mandatory pick five. And the one today, which has got some regular races, and then ends with the Belmont Gold Cup.
Correct. Anytime we have three pick fives on a card, which is usually, you know, when we have 11 races or more, the middle pick five is always going to be a mandatory payout. If there is a carryover in the early, it carries to the early. And if there's a carryover in the late, it'll carry to the late the following day.
We should mention, you know, in addition to that two-day 20-cent, 15% takeout, is that a retail only, by the way?
Yes, that is.
Excellent. In addition to that two-day 20-cent pick six, which is also a mandatory, there is the regular $1 pick six today and then tomorrow. And there's the standard pick six rules apply, the $1 pick six today and tomorrow.
Yep, correct. And if there is a carryover, that will carry. And that's in the dollar.
Exactly. So it's just the standard. I mean, just so happens that when it comes to, you know, particularly to tomorrow, the $1 pick six, and I got to check back. Is the $1? It is going to end with the Belmont, isn't it? Tomorrow, it's not the last six races tomorrow.
Correct. It's 2 days a year that we have a lot of these big pick ends end on races that are not the last race on the card, and those 2 days would be Belmont Stakes Day and Travers Day. Yep, and then just a reminder on post times today, first post is 12:50, tomorrow's 11:20, so it's a little earlier than, you know, previous years, but those would be the times for the next 2 days.
Excellent. And 6:44 post for the feature for the Belmont tomorrow, as we say goodbye to the Belmont on NBC. Joe, any other advice? Any other things that otherwise? I think we got all the standard presence. Early pick five, the early pick four. There is that. Extra pick four that starts with the Just a Game tomorrow. The Just a Game, Brooklyn, Woody, and Phipps. There's pick four and pick fives that end with the Belmont, and then there's pick five and pick four that end with the 13th. So you better have a game plan going into today and tomorrow.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, there's a lot for everybody here. And I guess more importantly, it looks like the weather is going to be great. So on the turf today, and if you're in the area, I encourage you to come on out. It's going to be a great 2 days of racing.
Well, Joe, I really appreciate it. Joe Longo, everybody. And as we've said in the past, if you have any questions about these kinds of mechanics, Joe is your guy, and you can reach him on Twitter. You can reach him JLongo at NairaInc.com. And Joe, I'm sorry I'm not there, but we will look forward to seeing you soon. Good luck to everybody.
Yep, condolences to you, Steve. We'll see you
soon,
buddy.
I appreciate it, right, Joe Longo.
Care.
Everybody, you got it, Joe Longo. Of course, who was an accountant, and he loved racing, wanted to get involved in the game, went to the University of Arizona as a graduate, basically, as a graduate student, and, has one of the important cogs in the wagering department, not just at NYRA, but, industry-wide. So Joe does a tremendous job, and always happy. And I just wanted to see, I can never remember, there's certain people that we don't have on all that often, but Joe is he's got a fun, there it is. Joe Furlongo. I knew it was something cute. Joe Furlongo. That's great. All right. We've got to, Casey letting me know that I've got to get a hold of, I'm going to have to get a hold of Nick Luck myself here. All right. So hang in for 1 minute while I pull together the technical aspect of this. And we've got, obviously, not just the quick recap with Nick of last weekend of Epsom and the Oaks and the Derby, but we're going to get a couple of minutes in from him for the opening part of Royal Ascot. Okay, so looking forward to a Nick Luck early glance ahead, because it's going to hit us right between the eyes as soon as the weekend wraps. So there we go. No good. All right. And then Nick just texting me here to get to him. There we go. Let's try that again. And Nick, there we go. All right. Yeah, Nick, I'm sorry. We're a little on the fly here. Good morning.
This week, I've been thinking of you.
Nick, I appreciate it, and I know that you also, we're not far removed from your mom's passing. I said yesterday that until this happened, I really, it hadn't it hadn't dawned on me how many of us, I guess, of a certain now of a certain age, have been dealing with this in recent months, and you know, so it's as Shug McGahee always says, Nick, you know, it's part of life, and I've been really heartened by all the kind, just the kindness that's been extended. Has been unbelievable, so thank you. Nick, a couple of things I wanted to touch with you today, and I didn't want the week to get away, and the fact that you couldn't be here, of course, with Royal Ascot starting, but let's get a quick recap of last week and the fabulous Oaks on Friday, and then a absolute dominant Derby performance.
Yeah, both great races in different ways, weren't they? I think we sort of thought that they'd be quite formful races, quite chalky races, and they were to an extent. The Oaks was a wonderful finish, and I think the debate will rage forever, really, as to how unlucky Emily Upjohn was not to win the race. I think you have to say that, granted a best trip, she would have won. She'd had to wheel around the outside, make her ground up against a bunch of horses who weren't really going anywhere at the time, and Frankie Hurst try and overcompensate for a tardy start, and he probably pressed the trigger a little sooner than he'd ideally have liked. It all just didn't go right, and she lost by a short head. So that said, the winner showed sharp improvement, and it's a typical Aidan O'Brien filly who just keeps getting better. So I'm looking forward to the rematch, if indeed it ever comes, but it might well be that we see Emily Upjohn at Royal Ascot off a very quick turnaround, a very slightly un-Gosden-ish manoeuvre, but he obviously doesn't think she took anything out of herself at Epsom. Wow. And she could bowl up in the Ribblesdale, which would be an interesting one going back to a Grade 2 next week. And I'm just wondering if in the back of his mind he's thinking, if she runs well over a mile and a half at Ascot and wins really easily, I wonder whether he thinks, with that three-year-old filly's allowance in the King George, whether that might be the job for her. Given the fact that he's done it with Togruder, he's done it with an Able, three-year-old fillies in the King George, absolute chunks of weight. That might well be the plan for her, I think. It might, of course, also be on the agenda for the Derby winner, Desert Crown, because it's a race to Michael Stout Love. The thing with him is, for all that he saw out the 12 furlongs well, he's travelled with such consummate ease and held a position so well, you'd think he'd be equally effective at Amalna Corsa. Perhaps even more so, and especially given the damn side of his pedigree, which is all about miling pace, really, even though he's biased there. So it's intriguing. It's setting us up for a beautiful remainder of the season. And with the older horses looking a bit thin, with the possible exception of Bay Bridge, the Michaels runaway winner at Sandown, and Hurricane Lane, who reemerges in the Hardwick Stakes, at this stage, a three-year-old Desert Crown Emily Upjohn Tuesday. Got quite a lot going for them.
It certainly coming as part of the Jubilee, it got a lot of attention here, and I think it whetted everybody's appetite for, you know, what's coming next week. And of course, everybody also hopeful that that the Queen's able to attend next week. And before we get to that, but we're going to miss you here in New York tomorrow, Nick. Some quick thoughts transitioning out of the Triple Crown and wrapping the Triple Crown up here. If you were here, what would you be talking about and thinking tomorrow?
Well, if I was with you, I'd obviously be majoring on the best story in the race. You and I discussed the whole Rich Strike path to the Belmont Stakes the other day, so I don't want to go through all that again, but it'd be fascinating to see whether he can run a race, whether he can run any sort of a race. And even over a mile and a half, you'd have to be concerned at the lack of signed on pace in the race, I think. But, you know, from a human interest point of view, it's no doubt that's the most interesting story, really. If I was betting, if I do bet, which I probably will on Saturday, I'd see what the British books are offering, but I'd certainly be interested in Mo Donegal if the price was tempting enough, and I'd be interested in Nest as well, because I always like horses for whom a race has been a long held ambition. And I suspect, I remember interviewing Mike Rapoli before the Kentucky Oaks, and the whole idea of running her in the Belmont Stakes, given her pedigree, and given that Fletcher's won the race with a filly before, that was definitely uppermost in their mind. So I'm kind of interested in those two against the field, I think.
I like the filly. The more I liked her, and I'm not sure if I'm picking her when I write this up later today, but I certainly have got her as an A in my 2-day wagers. So, and I expect Rich Strike to run well. I think he's going to be on his toes and a little bit more forward. And if he finishes the way he was finishing in Louisville, I don't see why he's not a major player. And I think We the People is going to have every chance, Nick, to just gallop them into the ground.
The problem is, I just think do we think that We the People is just likely to be too short a price given the actual CV that he's put together? I mean, he's it's not an obvious one. You know, he's the only horse that's likely to go forward, and he's got the one hole, and was very impressive last time. But again, I think it came out of nowhere. But you'd want to see him do it again, really, wouldn't you?
Well, and I will not be surprised. Let's put it that way. And you know, this is a race that has been won in that fashion, you know, very, very often. Well, we're looking forward to then getting going on Tuesday, and I knew I wouldn't be able to reach you Monday, so I wanted to get some thoughts going into Royal Ascot, and of course, things go, you know, immediately into high gear on day one.
Yeah, I mean, probably the best horse of the week, really. Well, the two best horses of the week, arguably, on the first day, Baid and the Sprint and Nature Strip. We'll come to that in a minute. But Baid, to start with it, he's around 2-7, 1-4 at the moment for the Queen Anne Stakes. To be honest, Steve, I think he should be about 1-10.
Wow.
Unless something goes badly wrong, I mean, that's the that's what you're reckoning with really. Something has to go badly wrong for him to be defeated. The Real World is the second favourite. He actually conked him at Newbury. The Real World, a super horse with excellent form at Ascot. And, you know, he's perfectly worthy of winning a European Group 1, but he's 8-9 pounds shy of Baid on everything we know, and Baid could yet get better. And Baid Stable remains in absolutely blistering form, as they have been for much of May and June. So I don't really see any reason why this shouldn't be a cake win.
Beyond that, as the shortest price on the day, we certainly are going to see a couple of favorites like Golden Pal, right? Golden Pal should go favored in the King Stand, and then.
Wow, I don't know. I mean, you'd have thought so, but so much noise being made about the Australian Horse Nature Strip that I think they're going to be pretty close in the betting, really. The interesting thing is, and I don't know whether we talked about this the other day, I don't remember, but I've certainly talked about it on my podcast, is that because the Americans and the Australian horses are dominating the markets for the sprint races, there's got to be a little bit of value in one or two of the locals. Certainly across the board, or you know, each way betting, exotic betting, There's got to be horses there that are just too big, because there's always a chance with horses who've travelled that they're going to completely bob out. You know, we saw Golden Pal take a fierce hold with Frankie Dettori at York last year and not get home in the Nunthorpe. And that last half a furlong for him at Ascot, we saw in the North of Stakes when he got beaten in the shadow of the post as a 2-year-old. He'll be on fumes late. Especially if there's a shower, and especially if he gets some pace pressure. Okay, he might just be good enough to have burned them all off and hold on, but I'm really taking really short odds about him. There's a horse in the race called Twilight Calls, who I think is very, well, I know is very, very talented. He should have won the Temple Stakes last time. The faster they go, the better he'll run. He's a very strong traveler. The stable's got a brilliant record with these sort of horses. I think big odds, he can run a big race against the American horse and the Aussie.
Well, we're certainly, we're hard pressed not to be rooting for Wesley and the rest of the American interests. Talk about the St. James, Nick, because that Corobus is going to be a short number.
Yeah, he is, to be honest. And one of the reasons why is that the dangers in that division are stabled in the two stables next door to him at Moulton Paddock, at Charlie Appleby's stable in Newmarket. You know, the two horses that he would have most to fear from are Native Trail, certainly, and possibly Modern Games. And they're both classic winners as well this season, but you know, neither of them are going to show up against him. So Corobus has got a, I'm not saying it's a free hit, but he's got a golden opportunity. And I don't see any reason why the track, unless he gets dealt a really bad blow by the draw gods and there's suddenly a big field he's part right on the outside, I don't see why the round mile won't suit him even better, because the emphasis is more on pace and the ability to show a turn of foot, and that's exactly what he's got. He just doesn't want to find himself too far back with a short straight to Ascot, but he looks a lot more tractable in the 2000 guineas than he had done as a 2-year-old, so I'm not sure that heavily exaggerated weighting tactics are going to be needed, and I still can't get out of my mind what he did in the mid-part of the Royal Lodge Stakes 2-year-old. Eventually he was beaten in the race, but it was the talent he showed in the middle of the race, and I said, oh my God, this is the second coming. I'd be really disappointed if he gets beaten next week.
Talk a little bit to the rest of Tuesday. You know, we got the Coventry. The 2-year-olds will be on display. Obviously, the Ascot Stakes, which looks like a very balanced bunch. Nick, who else on Tuesday should we be watching out for? Do you have a price or two that day one you seem to like?
Well, I don't think she'll be a price particularly, but there's a mare that's running in the Ascot Stakes, and I think. Pretty sure, if I haven't got this wrong, that William Bjerk's been booked for the ride, and that is a horse with no name. Nikki Henderson, the top jumps trainer,
right,
trains her. She's got a really lovely pedigree. She's a very, very good hurdler. She was just beaten at the Cheltenham Festival this year, and because she hadn't run on the flat for a while, she returned to the summer game. Incredibly well handicapped, and Julie made no mistake by winning races with a consummate ease at Newbury and at York. I'm still not sure the handicapper's got to, well, I'm pretty sure the handicapper hasn't got to grips with her. I'd say she's a stakes mare, really, under either code, and I'd be really disappointed if she doesn't run well. I think 8-1 is actually a pretty good price.
The top contenders there, Bring On the Night and Pied Piper, Arcadian Sunrise, Coltrane, Goshen.
Yeah.
My God, Marshall Plan. I mean, everybody is within 6 to 10 to 1.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really competitive race. There are some very good jumpers in this race. Very good ones who've had their not light hidden under a bushel, but. They've not shown their full hand to the handicapper, so they're carrying less weight than they ought to be. And I certainly think a horse with no name she'd be at the top of my shortlist. She likes nice fast ground, and she's going to stay really well.
Anything else on the Tuesday? The Copper Horse, the Wolferton. Anything we should be aware of?
Well, the interesting race on Tuesday is the Coventry Stakes. The two horses that have really impressed me are my 2-year-old Bell and Persian Horse. Now, Blackbeard and Little Big Bear are good horses of Ape O'Brien, but I thought Noble Style looked absolutely brilliant here when he won back in May. Beat a good horse called Wallbank, who I'd be fancy to run well in the Norfolk Stakes. But I think Noble Style will go very well. Still around about the 11-4, 3-1 mark. It looks a very, very strong running at the Coventry on Tuesday.
Very nice. Also early in the week, Wednesday, the Queen Mary and the Queen's Vase, the Prince of Wales. Always seem to, we're dealing with short fields here, Nick, and the Prince of Wales always seems to have a short field.
Yeah, it's come up a bit. It's come up a bit, a little bit light again, you might argue. And that's really because you would have had Mishriff here, I think, if he hadn't clearly been set back. I think they're going to wait for the eclipse with him. You might have had a horse like a Dave, as well. You may still have him, but he wants the grounds off. And we were hoping we might have Adair as well, last year's Derby winner. They were the two of the first three in the market until about a month, well, until about 3 weeks ago. But neither of them are going to make it. So it's left the way clear, or it had left the way clear for the Japanese Dubai winner, Sharia, who won a very strong edition of the Shima Classic. And the question with him is whether he'll be equally effective cutting back to 10 furlongs. But his main opposition are sort of staying types of horses as well, including the Bay Bridge, who I talked about a few moments ago. He was wildly impressive at Sandown the other day for Michael Stout. I find it quite hard to choose between them, but at the current odds, Bay Bridge is around about a 5-4 shot, Sharia 3-1. I think I'd take a chance with a Japanese horse, just simply on the basis that he's nearly three times the price.
Well, the rest of the week, Nick, some of your other spots that we'll be excited about. We haven't really talked about Wesley and his contingent yet.
And 2-year-olds look very good again, don't they? This Queen Mary filly looks like she could be one of his
Love Rains.
Ones, Love Rains, but she's running into quite a good group, and there's lots you can give a chance to here, but Dramatize, the filly who won at Newmarket, the Craven, the Guineas meeting, showcasing filly of Carl Berg. These owners and this trainer have got a lot of good two-year-olds this year. I think in their own mind, this is much the best of them. And I think she's easily good enough and quick enough to give Love Rains at least something to think about. Love Rains is a deserving favourite, but I think Dramatize is interesting. I think All the Time, the filly who won the other day for the Crisfords at Nottingham, she wouldn't be the first horse to debut quite close to the meeting and then come on and win. I remember Ardad did it, Joviality did it. I think she could run a big race. But yeah, the Queen Mary looks a good race. Dramatized ought to give Love Rains the most to think about.
Well, and then of course we mentioned Golden Pal. Later in the week, you've got Campanelle, right, in the Jubilee.
I think this is a tough spot for Campanelle. It's a really admirable campaigner, international campaigner, to do what she's done at a couple of Royal Ascots, get awarded the race last year in ground that would have been, it was horrible ground for everybody, but would have been particularly unpleasant for her. And that was a wonderful performance, but this is a strongish race. I think she's got it all on to win this. Home Affairs is a smart horse, he's a very important horse for Coolmore, I think as a stallion prospect. So this will very much have been his target for a long time. Those in the know in Australia, and there's a lot of people in Australia who know a lot more than I do about what's going on there. My friend Jason Richardson, who works for Channel 7, he's convinced that Artorias is actually got a better chance of the two Australians than Home Affairs, yet he's more than twice the price. So I'll just take that as you find it. And there's a mare that I'm quite familiar with because I've had the odd horse trained by John Quinn, and High Steel Princess, she won at the Royal Meeting last year. She's improved hand over fist. She absolutely smashed the clock in a weird-looking race at York last time, but there doesn't seem to be anything fluky about the time. The figures don't, the clock doesn't lie. That's the only thing that doesn't deceive you. And I think she's still improving, and I gather she's in the form of her life. So you know, again, for all the excellent credentials of the international group, I think Highfield Princess is a mare that shouldn't be underestimated in the Platinum Jubilee.
Nick, before we wrap, let me ask you about two races on Friday that are always important, or and certainly highlights on the back half of the week. You got the Albany and the Commonwealth Cup, and the Commonwealth Cup looks really competitive, particularly competitive.
For those who aren't familiar, it's a relatively new race. It was designed because 3-year-olds didn't really have anywhere to go. You're allowed to run 3-year-olds in the Kingstand and the Diamond Jubilee, but there was no sprint division for 3-year-olds really. And so this came into being 5 or 6 years ago, and it's been a great success. And I think this year's race will be plenty strong enough. Twilight Calls is an interesting runner. Very, very busy 2-year-olds. You remember Blue Out at the Breeders' Cup, but had probably had enough by then and ran 11 times as a juvenile.
Hmm.
11 times! But get this, you think horses who run 11 times as 2-year-olds, well, there aren't any of them nowadays, but they're not going to train on, are they? They're just horses who you're squeezing the lemon. Well, they're fast and precocious, but not a bit of it. He came out the other day, and he absolutely bolted up in a Grade 3 at May and saw out the stiff six really well. And I don't know, he might be just a bit of a freak. So the horse is going to be permanently underestimated. I think he could run well. Of course, we haven't really mentioned, Steve, the race of the week, which is, I think, the race with sort of the most interesting American contingent in many ways, where Pizza Bianca and Graham Motion's filly Spenderella take on a group of significant achievers. Now, I don't really know how strong the European filly's miling classic form is so far, but they're all here. So you've got the winner of the English Guineas, Cachet, the runner-up in the English Guineas, Prosperous Voyage. Cachet was then runner-up in the French Guineas, and her conqueror in that race, Mongoustine, is here as well. And you've got the winner of the Irish 1000 Guineas. So you've got all of them. Well, the winner of the Irish 1000 Guineas is going to be the favourite, Homeless Song.
Homeless Song.
Brilliant the other day. Yeah, you've got all of them. Plus, you've got last year's champion European juvenile, Inspiral, who hasn't been seen so far this year because she's had a setback. So she debuts in this race. She would have been favourite for all those races if she'd run in them. And then you've got your two Americans. The Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies winner and an undefeated winner from Keeneland last time. It's a serious horse race. It really is. And no one's ducking it. I couldn't possibly tell you who's going to win. But it's probably the race of the week. You know, everyone's banging on about Baid. Well, great. Baid canters down and canters back. If that's the kind of thing you like, then great. But if you actually want to see horses racing, then the Coronation Stakes is undoubtedly, I think, the race of the week. And I love it. I know it is an absolute open door for hard luck stories because of the nature of the track, but I much prefer watching races on the round mile at Ascot than the straight mile. You know, the straight mile, there's nothing, you know, track's too wide and you never know quite where they're going to race. At least the round mile, it's just a much better viewing experience. So my one bugbear really with a lot of mile, the top level mile races in Europe, the amount of them that are run on a straight track, they're very boring to watch as a general rule. I think the round mile is infinitely preferable.
Well, you prefer the round mile because that way the network doesn't send you up the stretch to do one of those those idiotic features. Why don't they just run the same one every year instead of making you schlep up there?
Well. you should have been a television producer, Steve.
Well, We won't talk about your ventures into the infield at Pimlico. Hi-ho. Yeah.
Are you suggesting I shouldn't put those on my reel?
I don't know how much of this you saw, Nick, but there was uniform eye rolling about the way in which they you know, the trite manner in which let's take the cultured English gentleman and put him out there in the, you know, in the mosh pit. Okay, enough of that already.
I appreciate that it's not your cup of tea. But then, on the other hand, like, it's not. I'm not being prevented from doing all the stuff that I would otherwise do as
That's
well.
True.
I mean, if I,
That's
you
true.
Know, so I'm not, you know. And I always think that if you're going to showcase the lighter side of an event or the color of an event or, in this case, the infield, then. I do take the doing the job seriously enough. I'm not saying you don't want to try and take yourself too seriously doing that, because obviously that whole kind of juxtaposition of the English guy in the mosh pit, whatever, is the whole angle. But at least you want to try and do it well. So, you know, I think as long as you try hard and try and deliver a half decent job, then you're achieving what you should be achieving. And I mean, of course I'm gonna defend our production, but I don't think there was too much of it, put it that way. I think the balance between the entertainment outside what was going on the racetrack and what was happening on the racetrack, I thought it was reasonably well balanced for
Hmm. We're having fun because there's really nothing you can't do from that standpoint with the microphone in your hand. Nick, I'm looking forward to all the coverage coming next week, and I appreciate the opportunity to get out in front of it a little bit, and we'll check in with you in about 10-12 days and digest it all as we do every year.
All right, Steve, it's always a pleasure, and I know it's a tough time for you, but we're all thinking of you, and thanks for doing this show every day. It means an awful lot to a lot of people.
Very kind. Nick Luck, everybody. The world's presenter, essentially. He's unbelievable. Just amazing. That whole funny thing about the infield is, every year and frankly every year the producers send him up that mile stretch, for that angle, the camera, and he walks, and I love it. Nick Luck, everybody, and you're set. At least you're introduced to next week's Royal Ascot action, and we'll have Kev couple of times next week. We'll get Kev in on Monday probably, and Wednesday typically, maybe Wednesday and Monday and Wednesday, or Monday and Thursday. We'll get his plays. Always some just ridiculous opportunities at Royal Ascot, because especially now, Nick had discussed this a couple of months ago. It came up regarding the addition of races. So it's more of a lot of good things. So Royal Ascot starting next Tuesday through Saturday. And we do hope that the Queen, for her to miss Epsom, and it was noted, but there was that encouraging wave from the balcony, right? Last weekend. So some people were holding out that she'll be able to, make Royal Ascot. So, all right. Jay Privman's going to join us next and take us to the top of the hour. I didn't even give you we just kind of launched into the action today. Hour two today, Scott Shapiro, James Scully, Nick Tamaro, and Andy Serling. So we'll have basically 15 minutes each, and then Jimmy Ventura and Hammer together, Dave Grenning as well, and we'll get a form to win glance with Papo Morales to close out the morning and the action into Belmont Stakes. And we're closing out the Triple Crown season with Jay Pribman, Daily Racing Form, America's Turf Authority since.
Marty McGee gets out of the hospital for his knee surgery.
Ooh, and safe travels and safe passage and quick recovery to our man, Marty. Jay, good morning.
Good morning, and first off, my condolences for your father's passing.
Thanks so much, Jay. I appreciate it. This is usually one of my favorite weeks, of course, and you know, think of it this way, Jay. It provided you with a much lower carbohydrate count on the week.
I know. I didn't get my hot bagel from you the last couple of days, but
you got the one. At least you got the one. We got a ceremonial. It was a ceremonial bagel.
And had a generous dollop of cream cheese on it, so it was good. Well, we'll look forward to getting together down the line when things are different.
Exactly. Well, it's been that's a great segue, Jay, because it's been a different Triple Crown. Your thoughts as we wrap up the spring classics?
Yeah, it's just been, like you said, it's been a different kind of Triple Crown with the Derby winner not running in the Preakness and the Preakness winner not running in the Belmont, which is the first time that's happened since 1954, so 68-year historical statistic for that, and 8 in the Belmont tomorrow will be the third time in the last 8 years that the field's that size, and that's assuming nobody is withdrawn unexpectedly. If it goes down to 7, you'd have the same size as when Rags to Riches ran. So, yeah, it's been an unusual Triple Crown, but, you know, they're all, each one has its own flavor, and that's been the one that we were presented with in 2022. Hey, it sure beats having the Belmont the first leg of the Triple Crown at 1 1/8 miles. So, you know, put it all in perspective.
Exactly right. Before we launch into your Belmont thoughts and then anything else, you know, over the 2 days here, today and tomorrow, Jay, what was your reaction and thoughts, you know, about the card in terms of everyone's, you know, seeming horror about the stake size and, you know, in some cases, competitiveness, in some cases, some very interesting star power, certainly that Phipps tomorrow. But what's your message or thoughts that you'd like to convey about this? How should we view tomorrow from an industry perspective?
As I said on Twitter the other day, you know, it's a lot easier to wrap your head around the small fields, not only Saturday but nationwide in these stakes races, when you come to the sober realization that this sport is not horse racing, it's horse breeding. And everything emanates from the graded stakes committee's inflation of stakes races over the years and the now subsequent reluctance and refusal with the way the foal crops have shrunk over the last decade and a half to shrink the stakes pattern program in kind. You know, this is what happens when you've got all jurisdictions, you know, looking out for their own turf, so to speak, as opposed to, for instance, in, you know, Japan or Britain, where it's all under kind of one roof. So when you've got the same number or close to the same number of stakes races you had 15 years ago and half the horses, it's a supply and demand situation. So that's what's going on here. There's not the numbers to have these kinds of fields. You know, not even just the races here Saturday. Let's look back to last weekend. You had the Penn Mile and the Pennine Ridge less than 24 hours apart for the same horses at two different tracks, and you ended up with small fields in both of them. Now imagine, I'm just using that as an example, but imagine if there was only one of those two races last weekend. You'd have had a nice 10, 12 horse field, and that's what's going on here. So in terms of specifically for tomorrow, you know, these fields came up small. The star power at the top is as good as it gets. You know, Echo Zulu heading up the 3-year-old filly race, Malafat, Latruska heading up the older filly and mare race, Flightline and Speaker's Corner and Aloha West heading up the older dirt race. You know, those are the best of that division, but there's not depth to those divisions or an eagerness to take on the best of that of those divisions. And there's other opportunities for horses in those divisions elsewhere, maybe not for the same kind of money, but where they don't have to go against the heavy hitters like that, and then they're gonna duck and dive into spots like that. So those are the factors involved in what ended up with in terms of the field sizes for tomorrow's races, or most of the races tomorrow, not all of them.
Yeah, because anybody that is confused about the Ogden Phipps, they need to have a better appreciation for for quality and you know, I think yesterday I said we really don't need a bunch of Flotsam and Jetsam in the way of those five horses, for instance. I certainly understand I understand the frustration about it. When it comes to the Triple Crown, Jay, and I can't recall if we've had a time, and maybe, I don't know, if this might not be the right time even to do it, but back of your mind kind of thoughts about ways to gain more continuity of participation in the 5 weeks? Any thoughts on that front?
No, I mean, these are, maybe raise the purse of the races, but these are classic races that are important for the division, and it seems like everybody wants to run in the Derby, and then fewer horses want to run in the Preakness, and even with the time off, everybody says, "Oh, well, there needs to be more spacing." Well, okay, how many of the horses that ran in the Derby and didn't run in the Preakness or in the Belmont? Only three. So it's not just the spacing that's going on here. There's just a reluctance to run in these races, and I know there's been a lot of discussion recently about the spacing, and as I said with you last week, I think this is a recency bias at its utmost level when you consider that there have been two Triple Crown winners in the last eight Triple Crowns, and if Epicenter had won the Derby instead of Zandon, Epicenter for sure ran second instead of Rich Strike, you'd have had the Derby winner in the Preakness, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. But I think everybody just needs to slow their roll here and don't get too far over your skis and take a deep breath.
be careful before you pull an Eddie the Eagle over those
skis.
Yeah,
exactly.
Jay, let's talk about this race, because it's fun and it's interesting. Everybody was carrying on about a filly in the Preakness and how much that added, and there doesn't seem to me there's been, of course I haven't been there the last 4 days, but it doesn't seem to me that there's as much cheppering going on about the filly in this race.
Yeah, she certainly got a she's got the best pedigree for the Belmont, that's for sure. Nest for a mile and a half. The question is whether or not she's good enough. I think if she'd have won the Kentucky Oaks, there'd probably be a little more buzz about her coming into this race. But she's the second best on paper of the two horses just from Todd's Barn that's in the race. So I think that's why she's gotten subsumed a little bit. But overall, Steve, this race just doesn't have a whole lot of buzz compared to years past. I mean, even yesterday, Nyra sent out an email blast saying good seats still available. So I don't know that we're going to have a packed house here tomorrow. For whatever reason, this race just has not captured people's imagination. And I don't know if it's because a improbable horse won the Derby and there's no Triple Crown bid or things of that nature. But not just with Nest, but just overall, there just doesn't seem to be as much buzz for this race as there often is. But you're right. I mean, she's not gotten as much attention for the bid that she's making of the filly against the boys and the historical significance that there would be. And look, I think there's better horses than her going in, but I understand her connections running in the race, it makes sense on a lot of levels. She's, as I said before, got the best pedigree for it, being by Kerlin, who's already sired a Belmont winner in Palace Malice, and just got beat by Rags to Riches himself when he ran in the race. The dam of Nest is by AP Indy. So you've got, you know, Belmont success top and bottom from a pedigree standpoint. And then what are your other options with her? You're going to cut her back to a one-turn mile and run against Deco Zulu? You know, that's your other option tomorrow. So that doesn't seem very bright. And the you know, the other option is just to sit on her. And if she's doing well, to me, she deserves a run in the race.
No doubt, no doubt. All right, take us through this field then, Jay, and how you boiled it down.
Yeah, you know, obviously we the people's got a decided pace advantage in the race. His last race, I think, was really dressed up. It was a speed favoring track, and he got loose on the lead, and it was an off track, and it just carried him to a giant fire speed figure. Normally, that's the kind of horse I'd be incredibly eager to gamble against, because I just think the race is, you know, made him look better than he might be. But man, the race is going to come up kind of similar tomorrow, it looks like. The only way somebody's going to be able to go with him, and I realize a mile and a half, it's not like, you know, mile and an eighth, but, you know, for the other horses or another horse in the race to go with him, somebody's going to have to go out of what they normally would do and be used a little earlier. And I don't know who that would be. I think the game plan might be just to hope that we the people can't stay the trip and that the extra distance and gets to him. But from a pace standpoint, he is the right horse. And I thought David Aragona was very smartly clever in making him the favorite, because I do think he has the right favorite based on those factors. The horse that I may end up gambling on, though, is Creative Minister, just because I don't know that he's reached his peak yet, and I think of all the top contenders, he's going to probably be the best price. I think he'll be a higher price than Rich Strike. He'll be a higher price than Modonegal. I picked him second behind We the People, but you know the price disparity might have me make a small wager on him. But I'm not thinking that this is the race that's going to be my, you know, banker of the 2022 gambling season. I just don't have a strong opinion in this from that standpoint. So, but that's kind of my thoughts on the race.
Well, and you were out ahead of Creative Minister for people when they came 3 weeks ago too, and you had made sure to alert everybody that he was the interesting party. In terms of the Derby winner, he certainly has won some hearts and minds, it seems, his 10 days in New York.
No, he's looked very well here in terms of his training. His gallop on Tuesday was wild. I mean, he really did, I think, even more than was expected. And they've kind of taken it easy with him since then. But he, you know, today he just jogged. And earlier in the week, on Monday, Eric Reed told me that if he had stayed, you know, sharp as he was, he might even blow him out on Friday. Well, it turned out he was so sharp, he let him roll on. But then the very next day instead. And they've kind of gone easy with him since then and keep him fresh for the race tomorrow. But he looks well. I mean, I still can't wrap my head around the fact that he won the Kentucky Derby, because when you look at his form, it's hard to make a case for him. But in terms of his physical condition and, you know, how good his coat looks, he really does look like he's doing very, very well.
Belmont Stakes, 6:44 post tomorrow, and we wrap up the Triple Crown season. And Jay, as always, we get to this juncture, and we'll still have recapping to do next week, but your coverage just invaluable through the Derby Watch portion of the season, and then the Baltimore and Long Island swings. Anything you want to touch on from the rest of the card tomorrow or even today?
I mean, just going back to what we were talking about earlier in terms of the field size, I mean, these aren't races that are intriguing from a betting standpoint to me, but, you know, the star power is terrific, and I'm really looking forward to seeing Latruska against Malisad and, you know, Met Mile with, you know, the Breeders' Cup sprint winner being almost an afterthought, you know, behind Flight Line and Speaker's Corner. I'm eager to see Jackie's Warrior run today, Jack Christopher tomorrow. But these aren't races that are interesting to gamble on to me, because all of them look like they're races that are going to be won by short-priced horses. But, you know, enjoying watching horses of that quality run, I'll enjoy it in that context.
Jay, we enjoy the visits each and every week. Have a great couple of days. And do we know what the Privman dinner special is tomorrow night at King Umberto yet?
I do not know what Little Chiro has tabbed as what the dish will be, but I'll find out when I get there, and whatever it is, I will order it. Unless it's salmon. I'm like the only person in the world who doesn't like salmon. I mean, that would be like the crusher. If I might have to like order the Steve Bick instead, but I'll we'll find out tomorrow.
I cannot wait to receive the photo of the menu, which you were obliged to send me. Last year, I had to send it to you for the lobster wrap.
Yes.
And in fact, I'm looking up now the year of my Brujol, which continues to be it's the secretariat of King Umberto dinner specials. That year, it was the Privman Porterhouse.
Yes, and I had that, and it was delicious and plentiful.
DRF Privman every
week.
it's a stayer. It's appropriate
it
for a mile and a half.
In more ways than one, it was a stayer.
Jay, thanks so much. I'll talk to you next week.
All right, Steve. You take care. We'll talk to you next week.
I appreciate it. There we go. Unbelievable. Jay Privman, that was fun. Let's take a break. Top of the hour is upon us. Hour two coming. We've got Shap. We've got Scully, Nick Tamro, and Andy Serling, about 12 minutes or so each, with some handicapping stylings. Stay with us. Hour three later, Rick Hammerly, Jimmy Ventura, Dave Grenig, Papo, and more. Weekend preview at the races brought to you by Twin Spires.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, Contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6888.